Good morning, Council. As you're getting prepared, the next matter on our calendar for today is case number A18-1226, in re the estate of Alex Batinich. Is that how it's pronounced? Oh, you may be seated. Batinich? Batinich, thank you. You may be seated, Council. Batinich. Counsel for appellant, you will have 15 minutes for your initial arguments, followed by 15 minutes by respondent's counsel, and then 5 minutes for rebuttal by appellant's counsel if you so choose. When you approach the podium, please state your name for the record and the party that you are representing. And with that, counsel, you may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. Carl Yeager for the claimants in this case, Arthur and Jacqueline Zara Renander. May it please the court, counsel. This case is not appropriate for summary judgment that the district court determined down below. There are fact issues, and the respondent here is not entitled to judgment as a matter of law. Procedurally, you're aware that the court heard the motion before the discovery deadline had run. We had asked for the deposition of the personal representative in this case.
But first of all, in terms of ruling on summary judgment before discovery, a district court does have the ability to do that, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I would not challenge that, but in this case, it left my clients woefully unprepared to address the issue, the fundamental issue, the primary issue, and that was the accounting that needed to be done to address the very claim that we raised.
Go ahead.
Can you discuss the timing of when the deposition was requested versus in context with the filing of the motion for summary judgment?
Sure, Your Honor. The petition for allowance of the claim was made in July of 2017. A scheduling order was not issued until January 26th of 2018, and that set a discovery deadline of May 1, 2018. There had been conversations, as you might understand, between counsel about attempting to resolve this, discussing the possibility of mediation. Sufficient headway was not made, and counsel brought a motion for summary judgment on March 27th of 2018. We had, and that was scheduled to be heard on April 25th. On March 29th, we attempted to obtain some of this information from third parties by serving subpoenas on 5 non-party entities. And on April 3rd, approximately 2 weeks after the motion, we noted the deposition of the personal representative, Mary Batinich. For April 18th, which preceded the summary judgment motion by a week, her counsel steadfastly refused to make her available, not because of any scheduling deadlines, but because it was his decision not to produce her.
Hadn't she been deposed already in prior litigation?
Not in this case, Your Honor.
In prior litigation?
I do not know if she was, but if she was, that would have been in litigation long before even the determination of the right of the party to sell the land, which gave rise to the closing, which provided the proceeds, which are at issue in this case. So that would, if that had taken place.
Well, yeah, but didn't that take place in Iowa?
And if it had taken place, it would have been in Iowa. It would not have been related, of course, to this proceeding. And
well, the issues are very closely related between the two cases, though, aren't they?
They are related. If you'd like, Your Honor, I'd like to distinguish how they're not. In the underlying Iowa litigation, and there were several pieces of litigation in Iowa over a number of years, the last piece of litigation determined the sale of the land, which the proceeds of which ultimately are at issue in this case.
Well, what can I just want to understand, what is your claim exactly? Because I know that at one point you were claiming over $1 million.
$10.6 million, Your Honor, and that was not of my doing. I was not representing my clients at that time. We did not present that, and there was a substituted claim made in connection with this proceeding. What we're asking, what we asked for, Your Honor, was for an accounting, which our clients are clearly entitled to, and without that accounting, there can be no determination if or to what extent the amount of money that we were claiming potentially was owed or payable by the estate to my client. That would be unknown without that accounting.
What information would the accounting provide that's not already in the record?
Well,
because the amount that the property sold for is in the record, correct?
The amount that the property sold for is in the record, but there was nothing in the record that explained what happened to those proceeds. Where they were held, was it in an interest-bearing account? Were they invested on behalf of the LLC?
But I have a hard time understanding why the request is for $10 million because the sale is for $4 million.
No, Your Honor, I'm sorry. The initial claim by my clients before I represented them was for $10.6 million. That is not the claim. That apparently, or from, if it's even important, they're apparently there's some correlation to the suspected current market value and the percentage of interest in the property, that part of which has since been developed. That's not part of the claim here.
But you said what you're seeking is what you're claiming is over $10 million.
No, Your Honor. There was a substituted claim. What we are looking for solely is an accounting to identify what proceeds. What happened to those proceeds?
Well, I ask you this? I mean, you didn't sue RAI. This is just involving the estate of Mr. Abatovich.
That's right.
Right. So, and as I understand it from reviewing the Iowa Court of Appeals decision involving this very same RAI, Mr. Abatovich has a monetary judgment in his favor, or at least that he had it prior to his death, of $373,880, correct?
Correct, Honor. The operative or important words there before the time of his death.
All right. And that had not been paid, correct? It hasn't been paid?
Not in its entirety, but I believe that payments had been collected on some of that. Again, part of that accounting was never given.
Well, no.
Okay.
I assume your clients know if they paid or not paid. Is there anything in this record that indicated that they had paid any of that judgment?
I don't know what's in the record as to the amounts paid on that judgment, but the court below simply sidestepped the issue of of that calculation by purporting to take the perspective of evidence in the most favorable light to the non-moving party.
Well, but that's you're not contesting, you're not asking us to review the Iowa Court of Appeals decision.
Absolutely,
are you?
Not.
All right.
No.
So that's what we know in this case, is that there is a judgment against that in favor of Mr. Abatovich in this amount, $373,880.
As of a date preceding his death. Correct.
Then are you claiming the estate wouldn't have the right to pursue that as well? And
no,
have the right to that?
What I'm saying is that we don't know what the proceeds were. We know what the proceeds were. There was a passage of time between the time of that closing and the time of Mr. Botnich's death and today.
Well,
and the time we made our claim.
But you're not answering my question. Was there any issue that, is there anything in this record that indicates that that amount has been paid, either to Mr. Bonanich or his estate?
I don't believe there is.
All right. And is there any evidence in this record that indicates that the attorney's fees that were awarded in his favor against RAI had previously been paid?
I'm not aware if there is anything in the record to indicate that the attorney's fees have been paid.
All right.
Okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, and I just want to follow up then. If you've got this judgment against, I mean, if your clients have this judgment against them, and the only evidence we have in the record is that their percentage amount of this sale is offset by this, why? I guess I'm not understanding exactly what money can you be claiming?
Well, I'll try to help, Your Honor. The LLC, when Mr. Bonanich, when the proceeds were, when the closing took place, proceeds were deposited in some account, purportedly for the benefit of or on behalf of the LLC. We don't even know that. We don't know if Mary Bonanich, the PR after Mr. Bonanich passed, had taken those proceeds, used them, invested them, but those are RISE proceeds, and 66% of those proceeds were Renander's. Just because there is a judgment in favor of Mr. Bonanich, now held by the PR, doesn't give her the right under collection law to bypass procedures and glom onto those, that 66%. They would have had to have done the proper garnishment or attachment, a charging order, and then taken control of any proceeds to which the Renanders were entitled. None of that was done. That's the crux of our conversion claim, which was ignored by the court below. And as far as the amount, while you're right, we know what the amount of the judgment is, and we know what the amount of the proceeds were, but we don't know what RAI did with those proceeds after closing, and there's a passage of time. Presumably, or we would hope, if the funds were properly handled under fiduciary duties owed my clients, that they were held at least in an interest-bearing account. They might have been invested. We don't know. We're in the dark. And all we were asking for was an accounting as part of our claim.
Counsel, what authority does a Minnesota district court have to order an accounting under Iowa law?
By applying the law under which the entity was organized, which was Iowa law, and applying the Iowa Code 489.5023, which says, in dissolution and winding up of an LLC, a transferee is entitled to an account of the company's transactions only from the date of dissolution. The date of dissolution was 90 days following Mr. Bonanich's death, or August 14th, 2016. Now, the record reflects a closing statement that precedes that date. We have no accounting from the date of dissolution forward.
Why wasn't there an action brought in Iowa for an accounting?
Because at the time that the claim matriculated, the estate was located here in Minnesota. The PR of the estate was located here in Minnesota, and it was being probated in Minnesota. And I believe the Minnesota courts can apply Iowa law in determining to what extent the accounting, number one, is proper, and the amounts, and the process of determining what makes up that amount. What happened to those funds? That was why we wanted to depose the PR who had control of those funds.
This is kind of a similar logistical question, but because you do have a judgment in Iowa, why not seek to get that accounting through the Iowa courts and then just have that in addition to the judgment be enforced in Minnesota. It seems like you're almost starting to try over again.
No, the whole process
over again.
No, we're not trying to append any res judicata principles whatsoever. My clients do not have a judgment against the Botniches. Mr. Botnich had judgments against my clients, so we would not be enforcing any judgments. What we attempted to do in the proceeding in the estate was to get an accounting to determine either what was owed our clients or to determine the balance of what, which the district court assumed was the case, that there was a balance yet owing the Botniches, the estate, by my clients. But we don't know what that balance is. And we have no way at the end of this proceeding, without that accounting, to know whether there's a claim or if there's a balance, what that balance is owed. And that's important.
Well, could I ask you this? Because the judge went through the calculations and seemed to rely on this and basically found that basically you owe the estate, or your clients owe the estate, more than they could possibly recover for their proportionate share of the sale of this property. And because of that, and because you're basically, because they're, you know, you owe more than what they would otherwise be entitled to, that there's just no need to, you don't need this accounting because you're already in the hole, no matter what. So I think that's the essence of the judge's finding. Why is that incorrect here?
My time is up. Can I answer?
You may proceed.
That's the crux of our issue here, Your Honor. What the judge determined was only, was not, number one, what the amounts were. The figures that he was looking at, disjointed in time, a closing that preceded the event of dissolution, the obligation to provide the accounting, a passage of time, what happened to the proceeds. So we don't know that there wouldn't be a surplus. We don't know what funds Rye might have invested that could have resulted in net proceeds beyond what the judge had calculated, relying on evidence that we couldn't challenge because it was authenticated after we had an opportunity to respond on summary judgment. So I understand where Mr. Butterbrodt, his client, the district court wanted to go with this. I'm just saying they didn't give it the process that my clients were entitled to get there. And I'd ask the court, well, I'll say that for a rebuttal.
Okay. Thank you, counsel. And you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Counsel for respondent, you'll have 15 minutes.
May it please the court. My name is Robert Butterbrodt, and I represent Mary Botnich, the personal representative of the estate of Alex Botnich. I'll just address the discovery issue. When Mr. Yeager and I discussed the deposition of Mary Botnich, when we first discussed it, she winters in Arizona and she was still in Arizona. So really wasn't convenient to depose her until she came back to Minnesota. And I don't recall the exact dates now, but Mr. Yeager proposed that she be deposed in Minneapolis, and that really wasn't convenient either. She lives in Tower, and so that's almost a half day's drive from here, and it was winter still, so that wasn't terribly convenient. And finally, when he proposed to depose her the day before the hearing on the motion, and I said no, and I did write him a letter, and I explained the reasons why it wasn't appropriate, chief among which were that they had had an opportunity to do discovery, and I really didn't think, A, that they were entitled to information about Rye, the company, for the time that they were transferees after they were dissociated in October 6th of 2015. So from that point forward, under the Iowa statute, which I've analyzed in the brief, they are not entitled to information about the company during that period of time because they're not members. And that was our position. We stuck to that position through all of our conversation about trying to come to some kind of agreement unsuccessfully.
What about appellant's argument that they should be entitled to know what the current value of the proceeds of the sale is?
I don't agree with that. I think that the fact that Alex Botanich was the only full-fledged member when he died does bring about a dissolution under Iowa law. My interpretation is that's a dissolution event, and then the company must be wound up. But even before Alex Botanich died and thereafter, Rye was in litigation. They were in litigation that culminated in the decision October 6th of 2015 that ousted the Renanders from the company. That case was on appeal. The Court of Appeals in Iowa decided the appeal in June of 2017. Then the Iowa Supreme Court looked at it, decided not to review it further, remanded it to the district court because the Iowa Court of Appeals had overturned the attorney's fees decision and said that Rye should pay those attorney's fees instead of the Renanders. And so it wasn't until August of 2017 that there was finality with respect to the litigation over the control of Rye. It was really up in the air until it was known what the Supreme Court would do, who would be actually in control. It could have been, if the district court order had been overturned, the Renanders would have been back in the driver's seat.
But the summary judgment motion was after that litigation was completed in Iowa.
Yes.
And so why wouldn't they then be entitled to know the value of the assets at this point?
It's our position that the amount of money was known as at the sale, after the sale, and Rye was really not in business anymore. The real estate was its only asset.
Is there any information in the record as to what happened to the proceeds after the sale?
No, there isn't. But our position that it's money, it's not. They could have invested it in Foxconn or something, I suppose, and it might have grown in value, but Rye was no longer in business, really, as a going concern. It was simply an entity that was involved in litigation and winding up. So the idea that somehow the money was transformed, took into another shape, or was invested, it's all just kind of speculation. As far as the law is concerned, I think under Iowa law, the accounting has to address the proceeds from the sale that were fixed at the closing in February of 2016.
Well, could I ask you this question? Because I there's some, when I looked at this, there's some good aspect to the judge's decision in that he resolved the matter. In other words, he disallowed this claim. But let me ask you this. While that may have been a nice way to resolve it, how does, with the way the judge's order reads, how does this affect any documentation regarding their payment of the judgment? I mean, is that would that be a legitimate concern for getting an accounting? Because maybe the judge is right on his math, but I mean, can there still be a claim by the estate against them for what isn't covered?
The judgments remain unpaid. It's in the record that the judgments haven't been paid. So, and I don't represent the company, but at some point, Rye is going to have to be wound up under Iowa law.
All right.
Since it's an Iowa domesticated company, that would happen in Iowa. And in fact, the Iowa court retained jurisdiction over the whole mess.
Well, would this court even have jurisdiction, though, over Rye? Because they're not part of this.
Well, they're not a party to this.
This estate proceeding, right?
They're here, I guess, derivatively because Rye is owned by the estate. That's the connection.
But does the court have jurisdiction to order an accounting by a company that isn't a party?
I don't think it's appropriate. I guess I don't know the answer to the question of jurisdiction. I don't think it's appropriate because we're talking corporate governance of an Iowa company. The real question in the case is, does the estate owe any money to the Renanders? And I think the lower court answered that pretty accurately and correctly. No, they don't owe any money to the Renanders, and so the estate does not owe any money because the Renanders owe vastly more to the estate than than Rye would ever have to surrender of the proceeds from the sale.
Well, and see, I'm looking at it because I think there's two issues. One is whether this court has any jurisdiction to order an accounting by an Iowa company when that Iowa company isn't a party to the action. So that's one issue.
It's a very good question.
But a second issue is whether, and this is what I was getting at with you, since there is an outstanding judgment, wouldn't there be an argument, if we had jurisdiction, that they need this accounting so they can determine how much of this judgment is unpaid for their own records? I mean, wouldn't that be a reason they might need an accounting?
It seems to me that they would know how much has been paid. I don't know what Mr. Yeager's source was that something has been paid, because to my knowledge, nothing has been paid. There has been some collection effort in Alabama, but it hasn't produced any results.
Well, and as I understand it, the way it would work, and I just want to make sure I'm getting what's going on in the case. The way it would work is that there was the sale of the land. There were apparently some disputed debts that were paid off and settled, and that so that the amount, the actual net received was less than the total amount received for the proceeds, from the proceeds, right?
The amount of proceeds.
So we don't know exactly how much of that remains that could be utilized against the judgment. In other words, it may be, I don't know if this is going to be something that the appellant even wants to pursue, because they're going to end up with a number that's probably still remaining to be paid if this math is all correct. But
The proceeds from the sale were fixed by the settlement agreement of 2013, and because the price was set, and the settlement agreement also specified the liens that were supposed to be satisfied from the sale.
All right, and they were part of that settlement agreement on the price.
That's right.
All right.
So,
and what about
now here's this pot
the
of
liabilities?
Money that is, Rye has this pot of money now, and if there is a distribution to the Renanders under Iowa law when the company winds up, after all these claims have been disposed of, including this one, then Rye would wind up, and there would be a distribution of money to whoever is entitled. If the Renanders are entitled to any distribution, that would be subject to a charging order under Iowa law that would be just like an execution. They would get a charging order from the district court in Iowa to have the money that is payable to the Renanders, if any, paid to the estate. And the estate could seek that charging order now if they wanted to.
Okay, and just so I want to make sure that I'm clear on
how all this works, and appreciate the discussion from both counsel on this issue. So in the Iowa case, the Botnich, the estate received a monetary judgment against the Renanders in the amount of $373,880, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And here in Minnesota, the district court said that based on the monies that the Renanders would be entitled to receive, about $275,888, and ultimately said, even if we were to grant an accounting, and even if the Renanders are entitled to an accounting, the difference between the two, which is roughly about $100,000, they wouldn't be coming out ahead at all, correct?
That's right.
Is that a fair interpretation of what the district court said? Here's my question, though, is, as it's kind of similar to Judge Hooten's, but wouldn't the Renanders be entitled to an accounting simply to determine the exact amount that they would receive, so that even if the number goes from, let's say, 275 to 300,000, then doesn't that offset what the judgment would be? So rather than them ultimately owing $100,000, now they only owe $75,000?
I guess my answer to that, Your Honor, would be that one of the virtues of summary judgment is that we can be efficient in deciding disputes if there's no real issue of material fact. And there is an accounting, that there is going to be any material change in the result here, because as I explained in my brief, I believe I explained that the procedure for dissolution under Iowa law describes who gets paid. But for the purposes of the summary judgment motion, we ignored all that. And we said, let's just assume that the Renanders will get paid the maximum amount they could possibly be paid because of their ownership of 66%. And I explained that if we go to reality and distribute it according to the law, they're probably going to get much less than the 66%, because the Botaniches were owed money by Rye, much more money than was owed to the Renanders. The Botaniches put more capital into the company, and that's in the record in the Iowa litigation, than the Renanders put in. So if you factor in those facts, when the distribution is made under a dissolution winding up, there isn't going to be 66% of the proceeds paid to the Renanders. It's going to probably be zero, because all the proceeds will be used up paying the Botaniches what they are owed and what their capital contribution was, and you have to pay those things off before you can pay any distribution from profit.
Any other questions?
I think you make a good point about monies owed to the Botaniches, but I guess my question for you is there some provision in Iowa law that says the proceeds to be distributed are the amount at the time of sale, or is any potential growth in the proceeds since then subject to distribution as well? In other words, if those proceeds were then put in an interest-bearing account at whatever, 2% interest, is that 2% interest also subject to distribution after the company is wound up?
I can't cite you to a specific provision, Your Honor. I think that the amount of money that's known is the proceeds from the sale, and I think that we can speculate about what it might have become when invested, but that is not a material result for the purpose of deciding the question that was before the court in the probate.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you.
You have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I think we honed in on the problem with the court's underlying grant of summary judgment in this case, because what we're left with, for efficiency's sake, at my client's cost, an undetermined amount in the first instance of there's been no adjudication of the claim. The court concluded down below that, well, it appears that Renander's will come out of this with nothing, so therefore summary judgment's appropriate.
Well, actually, I think the court probably went further than that, because the court was questioning whether it could order an accounting of a party that wasn't in the case. And okay. I mean, this is an estate. I'm not sure that I follow how you expect this court, the district court, to exercise jurisdiction over a party to order an accounting. You may have a right to an accounting, but the party's not in the case.
Well, the court exercised that jurisdiction by determining in this case that in either an accounting would be futile because my clients are going to owe money, or a determination that in any event the accounting that we have here is adequate because it does show that as a matter of fact, and apparently beyond any genuine issue of fact. This was summary judgment was granted here.
Well, can I just reword it and you can tell me
sure.
How I'm wrong. I think what the court is saying, that vis-a-vis your claim against this estate, there is no material issue of fact based on this record that you have any claim against this estate. And I think that, and because of that, and that's the nature of your claim, they granted summary judgment in favor of the estate.
I agree 100%, Your Honor, that that's exactly what the district court did. My contention is it was entirely wrong to do that, because there was an issue of fact. It would have had to make an accounting. It had to do that, and the court did that in a fashion. And I'm saying that fashion was wholly inadequate.
But can it do that without RAI being a party to the case?
Well, RAI, that's, again, I think that the court exercised, I think it's clear on the record, the court exercised its jurisdiction. It raised the question, and then it answered the question.
Well, because I'm just trying to understand, what else is there? All right, you agreed to the price to sell the land, correct? Your clients agreed
sure.
to that?
The numbers may be accurate. My point
is we don't know
because of the passage of time.
So the court can't perform a math problem? I mean, they agreed to the liabilities.
Well, we don't know what the estate did with the funds from the closing. We don't know what
Can I ask you this, Counsel?
Sure.
I mean, even if we assume that we don't know for certain what the numbers would be in terms of investments and what monies that may have been obtained, didn't the district court still look at the evidence in light most favorable to your client and say, even if we assume that you're going to have more money than the $275,000 that is on paper right now, even if we look at the evidence in light most favorable to your client, it's still not going to come anywhere close to the $375,000 judgment that Botnich has against your client in Iowa. And why is that not reasonable?
To answer that, I think that was the point that Judge Cochran raised with my colleague.
Probably. I'm probably repeating what my same colleague said already. But
I'm sorry. I want to be clear for the court as well. In a backhanded way, by saying I'm going to look at this evidence in a light most favorable to your clients, in effect, that's not at all what happened. because
why not?
We don't have a bottom, we don't have a number. We don't have a determination of if there is, in fact, a balance that my clients still owe, what that balance is. And that's important to know. I can bet if we go back to Iowa in any forum that the res judicata collateral estoppel argument will be thrown in our face, and we'd be hard-pressed to dispute that.
Which is why you're here then.
Because, pardon me?
Which is why you're here then in Minnesota.
We just want an adjudication of the amounts, and I see my time is up. Can I answer your question?
Please.
Your Honor? I'm not sure I understood your point about why we're in Minnesota. I'm in Minnesota because the estate closed here, and that's the appropriate forum for raising claims. And the claim that we asserted, while it may ultimately result in a negative number, where we still owe, my clients still owe money to the estate, that should be adjudicated. We should have had our opportunity to do that. We didn't get that opportunity, and I ask the court to remand this for appropriate further proceedings so that can be done.
I just have one quick question for you. Was, in terms of what the difference might be for the need for the county, was there an offer of proof made to the district court?
We had nothing to base an offer of proof on, Your Honor.
Okay.
Because we had that closing statement separated by years, not knowing what happened to the money, if it was invested, if it went to, you know, Mrs. Batnich.
Well, I'm just looking at the judge's order, though, and I'm looking on, let me just go back to where I saw that, because he basically...
I believe, Your Honor, is where he...
He says that the money's still with ARI, and it had not been distributed at the time of the motion. And I just want to look at that again.
Which goes to my point, Your Honor, about the court exercising jurisdiction.
It said no distribution of the sales proceeds. It's on addendum 5.
Okay.
No distribution, first paragraph, last sentence. No distribution of the sale proceeds has been made to the estate at the time of the hearing, and the estate indicated that RAI has not been liquidated because of pending litigation.
Yes, the funds are presumably still with RAI, which means the court had to exercise its jurisdiction here over RAI.
But why? I mean, if you didn't bring RAI in as a party, I'm not understanding how the court can exercise jurisdiction over RAI.
Well, I think that ruling has will have, if it's upheld, and I'm asking the court to reverse it, in part for this reason. We won't have an opportunity to go to RAI and ask for an accounting. This will be raised as
Except
a bar to
if
that.
If RAI has not been liquidated, won't there be an opportunity at the time RAI is liquidated?
Well,
to ensure
I'm not
that
sure.
Your clients receive any proceeds that they're due?
We've gotten no information whatsoever. That's part of our claim here. We're entitled to information. As a dissociated member, we're entitled to an accounting. So we don't know, number one, if and when it will take place. According to Mr. Butterbrot, we would get perhaps an accounting at some time in the future indicating that our clients still owe money. And this is the forum, the estate proceeding, the response to our claim is where this should all be adjudicated.
I guess I'm not understanding that because we have here, we just have the estate, and we have the whittle of the estate
sure.
that you've sued. You've not sued RAI. You could have.
The estate.
And you could have sought an accounting against RAI. In Iowa, certainly, and maybe even here, I guess that would be another. But they're not a party.
But the holder of the entire beneficial interest of RAI is the estate. That's the crux of it. So we have no other entity or party to pursue except Mary Batnich.
But an LLC is a separate entity. That's just basic law. I mean... That they're a totally separate entity from the estate.
It's a dissolved entity whose remaining member Also a dissociated member is...
But the judge found that it has not been liquidated because of this pending litigation.
Well, it appears to me, Your Honor, that we're, the judge has made a determination that's binding my clients and will, in any future proceeding, without giving us the benefit, if you're correct, of finally adjudicating this, finally determining what amount, if anything, my clients are entitled to or owe yet to the judgment creditor.
I guess I have one last question. So why wasn't Rye brought in as a party?
Because the beneficial interest holder, the only beneficial interest holder, was the estate. And that was acknowledged. And it proceeded on that basis. And if further proceedings down below were, you know, if this is remanded, perhaps Rye should be brought in. But I don't know that it's a necessary party.
But why not bring them in initially? And if they're not necessary, then that's all fine and well. But why not bring them in the first instance?
Again, because the estate is the holder of the beneficial interest in Rye. And Rye had been liquidated. It had been dissolved. There, you know, it's a nuanced distinction. It could have been done, I suppose.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, counsel. We'll be, thank you for the arguments and the briefing on this case. We'll be issuing an order within the 90-day statutory time frame. Thank you both.